For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my shirt. My plantation, my plantation, my plantation. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, your weekend review edition. Sorry it's a little late, but we're right on time as far as we're concerned. Coach, you're back.
Yeah.
In pain, but you're back.
Yeah, no, I'm probably about 70-ish, 75% ready, but I missed you guys and I hope you miss me too. Ramadan Kareem, for those of you that are partaking, to everyone except Talcum X, and I'm joking. but yeah, I'm back. Let's do this. I'll try my best to do this without slurring my words.
Fair enough. Ramadan Kareem, indeed. All right, folks. We're going to get right to it. Liverpool and City played for what will be the, at least for the foreseeable future, the last matchup between Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola. Arguably the two greatest coaches of their generation, probably, I would say. Based on accomplishments, teams coached, all that kind of shit. It's been a fun little, by my sense of what you'd consider a rivalry, this was not really a rivalry. Team did the winning, and it was way too friendly for my liking. I know a lot of people want to mature about it and say, oh, after the toxicity of the Arsenal-Man United rivalry back in the day, Listen, man, it's competition. I want them to compete on every level. Press conferences, field, site, compete everywhere. Call that bald nigga a bald nigga. Call that fake tooth nigga a fake tooth nigga. All that shit. Yep. When any coach, you watched the game. It was a great game. I'll give them that.
Oh, yeah.
What else did you think about it?
So the game itself, I'll probably leave until like the last part of it. But the rivalry between them two on the pitch, I think it's one of the wildest. The only rivalry you can actually compare it to is Arsenal United, because one team is capable of beating the living dog shit of the other and vice versa, basically. And if we're going back results-wise, look, City beat Liverpool 5-0, basically, one time. This was like in 2017, right? And then, you know, Liverpool also lost to them 4-0. But if we're looking at, if we're going back to when, or if we're looking about the overall picture, I mean, there's been a narrative that there's somehow a close rivalry in terms of what both teams are capable of, and I think it's come from the fact that both teams were so much better than everybody else, basically.
Right.
But if we actually want to be fair and partition it, there was Man City, a reasonable sizable gap. Then Liverpool, huge gap, everybody else, basically, right? And because of how far everybody else was from Liverpool, it gave the illusion that, you know, it was just them two. Now, don't get me wrong, Liverpool finished on 97 points and then win the league, finished on 93 points and then win the league, basically. And that's all fair and valid, but results are results. And you already know how we feel about 115 Chargers FC, but the rivalry to me only really manifested properly on the pitch, not in overall balance of what was actually won. Right. You know, to paraphrase what Gary Neville said, look, between 98 to 2004, Arsenal United basically wanted to kill each other. One team won three titles, the other team won four titles. It was essentially, if we don't win the league, you bastards win the league. We can't have that. Whereas with Liverpool and City, it felt as if, oh, if we don't win the league, we'll at least, you know, we can come second and make sure that, you know, we're the only ones that can say, oh yeah, we challenged this oil-rich club kind of thing as well. No. They're beating the living dog shit out of you guys. Like every year, they're doing it to you guys. And it was proof that this was the case when Arsenal managed to break their little monopoly last year, and how many upset Liverpool fans that weren't there to essentially comfort Pep when he finally won his Champions League. They were so upset, you know. So,
bro, look, they're still upset, man. Yeah. They're still upset. They're so offended by the fact that I don't even think it's about Arsenal. Like, because initially I thought it was an Arsenal theme. It's not even personal like that. They're just really upset that someone else is spoiling their little city pool scissoring party. Like, never seen no cuck shit like this in my life, bro. Like, it's crazy. Like, how can you be so possessive of a rivalry where you got your ass beat constantly? I don't understand,
bro.
Man.
Bro,
I understand that shit. I mean, United beat us, but we got 3 out of 7.
Yeah. And it's the way we've done it as well. It's like we won one there, bro.
We actually won on the grass, man. We own Old Trafford, nigga, to this day.
To this day.
We literally have a champion section at Old Trafford for us. So when we talk about rivalries, to me, the games are always fantastic. And if I'm going to be fair, I think a lot of the games were probably higher quality than some of the Arsenal United games. But the intensity...
Almost certainly.
Yeah. I think
but in terms, the game has just gotten better.
Yeah.
And these are the two... At the time, Wenger and Ferguson were going at it.
Yeah.
They were arguably not the two best managers in the world.
Yeah.
These guys are probably the two best managers in the world.
Yeah.
And the game has changed so much that both teams are filled with most of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
One might argue, you know, so that wasn't the case back then. So by default, the quality of the football.
Well, actually, I'd like to argue that no, Arsene Wenger and Alex Ferguson were probably the, if it were, there were two of the best managers in the world.
Yeah, definitely. That's not in doubt. I just mean today, one outside of Carlo Ancelotti, one can easily argue that, and easily, like, I'm not debating with anybody that says the two best managers in the world are Pep and Klopp.
Yeah.
They've worked in England for most of the last decade. Back then, there was an argument. There were a lot of other managers that were active that were Wenger and Ferguson's peers. You know, even back then, it wouldn't have been crazy to call someone like Sven Goran Eriksson their mates back then, because the game was more spread out. You know, England wasn't the confirmed best league yet. But during this Pep Klopp era, I would say for the most part, England has been the best league, regardless of continental results. So that's why I think the football is definitely better, I would say.
Yeah.
Not that I watched a lot of it, if I'm being honest with you. I don't like the niggas.
Yeah, but I mean, just looking at what was actually won, there's no contest there, right? So the rivalry there, I think we've got to put that in brackets. In terms of what happened on the pitch, though, I mean, Liverpool, the only team, I think, to really stress Pep City. And I mean, to the extent where, if you're looking at even the documentary, you know, Pep was having sleepless nights and how to keep their front three, like, quiet. But he couldn't really come up with a solution. They'd always find a way to hurt them. And I think that was really, really interesting, because he's gone on record to say, look, Klopp's the one manager that he feels as if, you know, really had him stressed, basically. And Klopp's basically returned the compliment, as you would, because they, you know, they love each other, obviously. But I think one of the most interesting and genuinely most interesting things about this whole entire rivalry on the pitch is, throughout the entire time of it, there hasn't been a single time where I felt Liverpool have had a better squad than City. Not once. Even on the pitch, didn't feel like they had a better first 11 or better first or better midfield even. Not once. And Klopp closed that gap so much so that it was almost indistinguishable that what team actually has the better passes. Do you know what I mean? It didn't matter. It really didn't matter. You couldn't tell the difference.
I know you're saying all this shit, but all I can think about is the fact that, and you're absolutely right.
Yep.
But they played a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe even played in Europe at one point, if I recall correctly.
Liverpool smoked them out of Europe, to be fair.
Okay. And not once did these niggas get in a real fight. Like, nobody, I can't remember a punch, a slap, nothing. Like,
they were kissing each other, bro. Like, nothing wrong with that. Love is love and all that. But I mean, they weren't really trying to squabble. Like,
but when Sadio Mane would play Arsenal, he'd be putting elbows in Kieran Tierney's head every week. Like,
There we go, man. It's weird. But I think to give this clash between the managers the respect it deserves, the best compliment I can pay them is, I would watch those games for years, for like a good 6-7 years, and think, fuck me, we not only just us, but we are so far from these teams. Like it doesn't even feel like we should be playing in the same league competition as them. Like, it just felt as if that they were playing, almost playing like a different sport, because not only was the intensity of the game so high, it was the quality. There were so many of the players were executing high quality maneuvers at such breakneck speeds, kind of thing, and hurting each other, making each other look average. And then they'd play another team the next week, and it would literally look like they're playing against a League One team. You know, like that's the best compliment I can pay them both in terms of what they gave each other on the pitch. But to me, it wasn't a rivalry. It was Liverpool, the closest team to make City sweat.
Let me ask you a question about these two managers. Obviously, over time, you know, because in one sense, when Pep first showed up, it was, oh, his thing is tiki-taka, even though we know that's a bit of an oversimplification. And with Klopp, it was heavy metal, rock and roll football, whatever. And I think over time, it's safe to say they've kind of both learned from each other.
Oh, yeah, they both evolved. Put it like this.
Well, here's my question before you go off, go crazy. You got all excited and shit. What's wrong with you, nigga? Calm down. This man is a nerd. My question to you, coach, is which one of those managers influenced the other more?
Absolutely, Klopp influenced Pep. Absolutely. Like, that's not even up for debate. And I'll tell you.
More than Pep influenced Klopp?
Yes, because Klopp, right? You know what a Klopp team looks like. You know, regardless of what iteration of it is, you know what he looks like. Midfield is chock full of guys that can run all day, that can win the ball, and can carry it, basically. Up front, ball striking masters, right? Finishers, guys that can move off the ball. There's no real recognized number nine. Even Darwin Nunez doesn't play through the middle for the full 90 minutes. He just doesn't. And then defenders that can all pass, right? You look at the evolution of Pep teams, right? I think the most quintessential, if you like, the most trademarked Pep team was the 17-18 Pep team. Look how much that team has evolved since 17-18, and look at the manner of what Liverpool have had to do to stay with them. No, the manner of which City have had to change to essentially stay ahead of Liverpool, while Klopp has essentially just played the same way throughout. Like, it's so obvious to me. Like,
I completely disagree with you.
Really?
I completely disagree. I think Pep has had more of an influence on Klopp.
Go on.
And vice versa. And that's mainly because just from watching the football and looking at some of the transfers. Like, remember when Liverpool bought Thiago?
But then he fucked it off afterwards. Look at his midfield now.
Listen, man, but this midfield is not even like this midfield is not the equal. These are not runners like Henderson, Wijnaldum, and Fabinho.
But the quality is
more of a passer. Endo got some shit to him for sure. But I don't really view these guys as just cloggers like the original.
But that's the thing. But that's the thing. Look, throughout Klopp's time, right, the weakest part of the team has always been the midfield.
Yes.
In this iteration of it, guess what? The midfield is still the weakest part. Like, it's always he's always prioritized the boxes.
But that's not because he wanted it to be the weakest part. He went for Caicedo this summer, didn't get him. Went for Enzo when Chelsea got him, didn't get him. Yeah. You know, so and him going towards those more cultural type of players, I think is the biggest influence that Pep has on him. Because he came to realize that at some point in this game, and it wasn't necessarily about facing City all the time. Yeah. Was about winning the league, getting those points so you don't get 97 points and not win. But he got to a stage where he was like, we need to be able to beat teams in more ways than just lumping it forward and playing so vertically. We need to be able to hold the ball a bit more.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of changed the profile of midfielder that he's been buying over the years. Yeah, for
sure. And even someone like Harvey Elliott is having a starring role, right? And I couldn't see a Harvey Elliott type playing midfield for Liverpool, let's say in 2018 or 2019 even. But here's the thing. Look at Guardiola's teams, right? Over the years, right, they've gotten bigger and stronger, right? And they've become actually, while obviously I think they lead the league this year with the amount of passes that they have, but that's purely because the amount of deep blocks they come up against. If teams were braver against City, you'd get a lot more end-to-end games versus City, genuinely. All of Pep's teams over the last, let's say, last two, 2 to 3 years, right, he's prioritized just being able to be a physical match for Liverpool.
Yeah, but I don't think it's for Liverpool though. You're giving them too much credit. Like, England is the league where physicality reigns above all else.
Yeah, and Pep said
before he played, before he faced Liverpool.
Yeah,
like, you face Liverpool twice a season.
Yeah,
that still leaves David Moyes' West Ham.
Yeah,
that still leaves whoever the fuck Sean Dyche is coaching.
Yeah,
when Pep called Arteta all those years ago to ask him for scouting information on an English team he was playing, I forget which team he was playing. I'm pretty sure the first things Arteta was telling me was about the second ball and all that. Like, I can't give Liverpool credit for that. That's at best, it's an English cultural thing. Like, English culture, hard man, big dude at the back, sticking in their net, keep it out of ours, football, you know? So I think Pep was just adjusting to the larger environment, not Liverpool specifically.
Yeah, but you have to remember as well, though, Pep could turn around tomorrow and say, do you know what, we're ditching this 3-4-2-1 or whatever that we play. I'm gonna go back to my patented, should I say, 4-3-3, and he'll win 90% of the matches in the league still, regardless, right? He will. Like, the players are good enough, he's still a good enough coach to find the solutions. But when I feel as if having that run throughout the entire season, you come up against Liverpool now, it's almost like, if that doesn't work, how else do I tackle them? So he's almost come up with multiple systems, in fact, where it's like, even if I'm not going to get to play my game, the players need to be comfortable enough to play this plan A, B, or C, or D kind of thing, knowing that they can still win the game, right? Yesterday, the second half is proof enough that Pep's probably going to have to evolve again. That second half, in terms of, if you want to call it a rivalry, that's what a rivalry looks like. When one team clearly has the other team on the rope. So much so that you take your best player off just to get more assurity in midfield. That's what it looks like. If Liverpool did that to City more often, Liverpool might have one or two more league titles. Those 1-point losses might have been a 2-point win the league by 2 points. You know what I mean? And it's, put it like this, Liverpool played, City played obviously their 3-4-2-1, if that's what you want to call it. Yeah. That's 11
players. It's just numbers, bro.
Yeah.
It's just whatever, it's more vertical because they have a Viking now.
That's it. And in the first half, to be honest, I thought people said, oh yeah, like, you know, it was an even game. I think City shaded it. I think both teams had chances, but I think City shaded it, and it was...
Oh, yeah. City controlled, which is what one. City controlled that first half for sure.
Yeah, and we've all heard it, you know, whatever Pep says in this, whatever Klopp says in the second half, Liverpool always come out just like a different team. And I think City have done well over the years to kind of control that... what's we're looking for? Control that that tide. Yesterday, no. Liverpool came out and said, yeah, we're treating you like Norwich. And I don't think I've seen a Pep side, not even at Bayern or Boston, that out of ideas and that stretched. There were so many instances where I felt when Salah came on as well, I was like, oh, okay, so this is the great equalizer. It was almost like City were like, oh shit, like Liverpool stayed in the game. And now they're bringing on probably the most dangerous player in the league now. We don't have an answer for that because, frankly, City don't have a player like Salah. Nobody has a player like Salah. So how do you counteract Salah? You don't even have a player like that in your ranks. How do you counteract him? Salah's game has gone to a level where it's like he doesn't need to score. He's creating like a hooligan now. And yeah. I think to my estimation, Liverpool realized that they didn't need to overcomplicate it. Get the ball to Salah and shit will happen. He put through Luis Diaz, I think, 2 or 3 times yesterday, and Luis Diaz fucked it kind of thing. And that's all the panic. All the players were attracted to Salah, and Salah just released it into space. Football can be so beautifully simple. The best player gets all the attention and everybody else can run off him. You know, and City panics. City panics. Like, that goal he scored against them last season, the season before, where he beat like 4 players, I'm sure that rings in their head every single time.
You know what I noticed in the game? There's a flashpoint. I forget what the incident was, but Salah got like visibly upset.
Yeah.
and Kyle Walker and like one or two other City guys were trying to calm him down.
Yeah.
And I felt like they actually kind of feared him.
Why would it?
Let's not get him mad because he can make shit happen, even though they're pretty good themselves.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I was just imagining it.
Okay.
I know what I saw.
You're the trouble winners, but there's a nigga on the other side of the pitch that scored against you the last four times he played against you.
So, you gotta respect them.
Yes, yeah, so it's all like, yeah, let's not piss him off. He might score three today. You know what I mean? Salah is that fucking good, guys. So yeah, I'm just I think you know, if we're gonna be kinder to City, sometimes it's just the other team has Mohamed Salah. Sometimes that's what it is.
As an Arsenal fan that's watched my team go to that stadium many times,
yeah,
I've suffered with Salah and without Salah. That's just Anfield, man. There's a reason why Arteta was willing to look like an idiot in that documentary.
Yeah,
playing speakers at the train. It's Anfield, man. Like, the place has a mystique about it. I know as Arsenal fans, we want to talk shit about it because, you know, we maybe don't have that at our current spot, but it's coming. We're building it up. But Anfield is just a really intense place to go play. I mean, look how close the stands are to the field, man. You don't usually get that at big clubs because they're big clubs and they're big stadiums where the fans got to be sat way the fuck back from the field. Like, it's intense, man. It's a competitive advantage for them.
And then when you have someone like Klopp as your manager, like, he's not stupid. He really feeds into it. Like, he really, really feeds into it, man.
Remember, he told them to bring the noise when we headed out there earlier this season. You know,
yeah.
I mean, Arteta is now doing that at Arsenal, which I appreciate because nobody has a monopoly on it, Liverpool fans. Okay. Just because you remember your manager doing it first doesn't mean no one else has done it before him.
Yeah.
But I will say the City goal. Let's do some incidents before we leave this game because we've gone quite long on this. But to be fair, it's maybe the last time we get to see these guys go up against each other. So forgive us, people. Hope you're enjoying this. But them scoring essentially the Trent Champions League goal against that was poetic in a way, wasn't it, Coach?
Yeah. And I think Pep is probably they spoke about the set piece coach, whatever, and they admitted, yeah, the set piece coach said they noticed the gap in the way Liverpool defend corners, especially at the near post, and they exploited it. But Pep is such a nerd and such a I think he enjoys doing things a certain way, even if you know you could do something else and it's more likely to bring about the result. I think he enjoyed that goal probably more than any other goal this season because it was against Liverpool at Anfield. And
I think one of the among the elite coaches in this modern era, like, because if you remember, like, Arsene, as much as I mean he's my forever guide in this sport, but you always got the sense that there were certain parts of the game that he didn't really care for.
Yeah,
like, he wasn't about to buy a big man to lump it up to, you know, like, Nicholas Bentner only played for Arsenal because he was nice with his feet.
Yeah,
you know, like, same thing with Giroud, you know, like, you had to have something about you, you know. Yeah, there was a certain bouginess to the way Arsenal approached the game.
Yeah,
these modern great managers, they will score in any way possible, and I think even Pep might have been like that when he started his career.
Yeah,
but as he's traveled and picked up things from Germany, picked up things from England, you know, he's kind of come to understand that there's no ugly way to score a goal, man.
Yep.
And that goal was a perfect illustration of that. It was the most non-Pep goal ever.
Yep. Yep.
And he chose his two most trusted guys to execute that, I feel like. John Stones and Kevin Brenner.
Yeah.
The two guys to trust the most. Speaking of which, Coach, we've seen it before, but it was pretty violent yesterday. Pep and ADB kind of going at it after the substitution. You know, he sat next to him on the bench and was explaining it. Like, I thought that was a huge sign of respect for KDB.
Yeah, it was. But it's almost, I think, if this was even a year ago, Pep's not taking him off. I think he's really trying to manage KDB's body. KDB's at the stage of his career now where his running power is clearly not the same. It's just not. And he's still a fantastic threat in transition and running with the ball and whatnot. But the more he does that at this age, the more likely he's going to be injured. And I think Pep's just really trying to reshape how he uses KDB now. KDB is pretty much the same level as Salah in terms of decisiveness. Go on.
He's like a special attraction now. Not an everyday player. Like,
yeah, you can't.
Foden has to take that burden on of being the everyday guy than KDB for the, like, our Jorginho. Like, for the big games, you have to be fit.
Yeah. You know?
And even so, though, in a big game like this, technically KDB is his best player, you know, to most of our.
Of course. And I think
was he that spooked by the Anfield washing machine that he was like, you know what? Fuck it. I tap out. No, that's what that was to me. He tapped out.
I think physically, seriously, physically, like you saw that big scar on his leg. KDB is going to have to change his game, literally. And it's fine because he can kill you from any. He can find a through ball from his own 6-yard box. That's fine for KDB to do, but he can't run. He obviously can still do it. I just feel as if the longer he plays at this level, it's going to be more counterproductive to the longevity of his career to keep playing that way. And I think Pep's just trying to prep him for the next stage of his playing style.
I would love KDB as a deep line playmaker, man.
This is what I'm saying. Like, he's good on the ball. He can take it on a half turn. He's good under pressure. He's got fantastic feet. He can find a through pass with either feet. Can you just imagine the damage he could do if he was to sit actually deep with Rodri? So, yeah. This is why he's a bastard. Nice. This is why Pep's a bastard, because I can imagine him saying, you know what, Dekkers, you sit next to KDB and just give KDB the ball, let him do the rest kind of thing. Do you know how evil that is? Yeah, we got to do something about Pep anyway, but I'll get to that another day.
Oh, man. the penalty for Liverpool, that was clear, a nailed-on penalty, but let's do some controversy talk. The one at the end, penalty or no? When Doku.
Oh,
so, McAllister was clearly looking for it.
So here's the thing. Any other part of the pitch, right? That's a foul. That's the thing we have to accept. Literally, high foot to the chest. The referee just gives it because that raw. That's crazy. And for some reason, it goes. The players go into the box, and
the rules change, man.
The rules change. It's just like what?
Why? But I think you know what. After when it happened live, it was a nailed on pen for me. I'm like, the more I've thought about it, the more I'm okay with that call. That's not even football, man. That's not even football. McAllister sees what's about to happen and just runs in there to go take the contact. Yeah. And Klopp is talking about, he could have killed him.
Yeah, but to be honest, Doku, when I saw Doku's foot go up, I saw it in slow motion in my head. I'm thinking, put your foot down.
He did put his foot down on McAllister's chest.
Yeah. But honestly, I think he took his dreadlocks a little bit too seriously because he looked like, you know, the Booker T high kick. That's what it looked like to me. Oh, man.
Like Eddie Gordo.
Yeah, man. Eddie Gordo.
Man, but shit, that was a hell of a game. If Luis Diaz had his sights on a little sharper, Liverpool probably win that in that second half. That was very impressive from them. But they still don't really. I mean, unfortunately, Arsenal doesn't have to play them again. I still think. Well, Klopp is leaving, but I'm gonna just say this now and probably regret it in about a year. But I don't see Liverpool like beating Arsenal for a very long time again.
Oh,
they haven't beat us in 2 years.
Well, here's the thing. Liverpool, unfortunately, will have to go through. Unfortunately for them, will have to go through a transitional period. But I don't think it's going to be as painful as, let's say, what United have had to go through. I don't think it's as painful as what we had to go through, because there's so much talent there, and they're actually in a position where they'll be in the Champions League, right? So they'll have some money to spend in the summer. Right. They have the stadium is like pretty much ready or whatever, you know. It's just about finding the correct backroom staff, the correct coach, but with the backroom staff as well.
And with the backroom stuff, they're getting Michael Edwards back.
Yeah,
he was one that helped them get, you know, was it like Salah and Mane and all them cats, you know. So, but I think he's getting an even higher role in the FSG organization. FSG owns Liverpool. So we'll see, but he seems like a good guy to put in charge of things.
For sure.
And it looks like they begged him for like, it felt like a full year to get him back. Like, they've been begging him.
I think he rejected him twice.
At least.
Yeah. At least,
you know, so. In any event, Coach, I think we've gone long enough on this city.
Yeah, man.
Let's just run through the rest of Europe real quick, then we'll come back to England, folks. We start in the Bundesliga, where, Coach, you'll be very happy to hear this. Bayern 8, Mainz 1. Harry Kane hat-trick, utter demolition. First man to score 4 hat-tricks in a debut season in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, man. I mean, I just keep going back to my I think the first or second podcast of this season, where I said that once it won't take him long to figure out how the game is reffed in Germany and just how things kind of roll in Germany. And once he does, he's just gonna score whatever number he says he wants to score, he's going to score. And look, man, Harry Kane is the best striker in the world right now, and he's playing in a league that allows for his style to just flourish, whether he's scoring or assisting. Mines, on the other hand, I hope you burn in hell. I hope when you get relegated, I hope you get relegated again. I hope after you get relegated, I hope that your club goes into administration. And when it goes to administration, I hope that every part of your existence is wiped from the internet and from any sort of physical media.
All right, now you're going too far, bro. That's not happening, but I appreciate your hope. Leverkusen, champions in waiting, eased past 10-man Wolfsburg 2-0 to restore their 10-point lead over Bayern. That's now 36 games without defeat this season, coach. Good stuff. Werder Bremen hosted Dortmund, and Dortmund won 2-1 away from home. Jadon Sancho with the winner, but he admitted that he didn't play well enough, and he actually pledged to try to do better.
This is why him and Ten Hag don't get along, because Ten Hag will see this result and be like, oh yeah, they won, kind of thing, and be like, oh yeah, and I think we could have scored more, could have done more, whatever, blah blah blah. And then you look at the stats and thinking, right, United got absolutely smoked. Then you have Sancho be like, raw, scored a winner today, but now I was pretty shit today. Can you imagine how that would drive someone like Ten Hag absolutely crazy?
Pretty much. Too much truth. You can't have that. You can't have that. Stuttgart continued their wonderful season with a 2-0 win over Union Berlin. Goals from Gourassi and Dennis Furich. RB Leipzig also won when they hosted Darmstadt 2-0. Mm-hmm. And quick over to the standings. Leverkusen on 67 points, 10 points ahead of Bayern, who are on 57 points. Yep. Stuttgart are in third on 53. Dortmund fourth, 47. Leipzig fifth with 46, and Eintracht Frankfurt are sixth with 40 points. Mainz are 17th in the table with 16 points, only above Darmstadt, and right beneath Köln. And we move, coach, to La Liga. You watch anything in this league this weekend, coach?
I saw bits and bobs, but I just want to say, look, Arda Güler, I will see you at M5 in about 2.5 years.
Because he's clearly following the prophecy.
Yeah.
At Real Madrid, he scored the exact same goal Ozil scored on his debut.
Yeah.
We'll be waiting. Don't worry.
We'll be there, bro.
But yeah, Real Madrid won that game against relegation candidate Celta Vigo 4-0. Vinicius scored the first one, then followed by two own goals, then Arda Güler wrapped things up. Vinicius got really upset in this game I would say he overreacted a little bit. Mm-hmm. I would say, but I understand the frustration when you're that good and players won't let you play. You know, if someone is pulling your shirt for 30 yards, yeah, you might want to push him afterwards, but you're a professional, bro. You know, and I hate to do this, but I guess it means I'm getting old. The kids are watching.
Yeah, bro. Certain things, obviously, you gotta be a bit mature about that.
Yeah, pretty much. Barcelona hosted Real Mallorca and won 1-0 with a golazo from Lamine Yamal. Mm-hmm. He's 16, and the other best player for Barcelona in this game was 17-year-old Pau Cubarsí.
Yeah.
On the one hand, yay, La Masia. On the other hand, please don't break these kids.
Well, my thinking is that they need to sell them. Like, no, seriously, because to protect their careers, because seriously, I know, I support New York Knicks, right? So I know what bar of soap ball looks like when I see it. And these boys, they might have about 6 or 7 showers left before the bar soap is done.
Oh, Lord. We'll pray for you kids, but keep playing well in the meantime. Cadiz hosted Atletico Madrid and beat them 2-0. This was the first team, Atleti.
Yeah.
Cholo's Atleti are the first team to lose to Cadiz in 6 months, my brother.
Yeah.
They have been terrible away this season. They've only picked up 15 of 42 away points this season.
Yeah. Do you think they got one eye on the Champions League?
No, I think they just suck away from home.
Okay.
They lost away to Inter, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. And honestly, Cadiz hit them quick. I mean, Juanmi scored 2 goals in this game, and they both came pretty early. So they I think they just kind of laid down. Maybe they did have a night towards the Champions League. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to win La Liga. So that's fair. That's fair. Girona, they're still around. They won 2-0 when they hosted Osasuna. Real Betis hosted Villarreal and lost 3-2 in what was probably the best game from La Liga this weekend. I got to watch most of this. It was fun. It had some of the worst refereeing. This was a peak. This is not football. This is La Liga game. Some of the worst refereeing I've seen in my life by this Hernandez nigga. Apparently, the joke out in Spain is that they call him Hernandez because he's so bad at refereeing that they had to name him twice. Last I heard that it was for JJ Okocha, but he's actually good at football. But yeah, Sorloth scored the late winner in this one. Villarreal were very good value for the win in this game. Betis looks strangely blunt in this game, but it happens like that sometimes. Coach, this is one you want to talk about. Granada hosted Real Sociedad, and Real Sociedad not only won, but they scored 3 goals in a late comeback in this game.
And now it seems as if, despite the fact that they're still conceding high-quality chances, they're now putting their shit away, finally.
Correct.
Which I'm happy about. And Tierney is playing football, which is, I think, look, man, Tierney's always going to have a space for me in any football team because he's a traditional left-back who can defend and who has an amazing cross on him. So he's always going to, he's put at least, he's an electrician. That's what Kieran Tierney is. He's always going to have work.
He did get an assist in the game from a cross, which is where he crossed to Robin Lenormand for the equalizer, and Andre Silva scored the winner in the 85th minute in this game. The standings in La Liga, Real Madrid are still top with 69 points, coach.
Nice.
Thank you. Girona are second, 7 points back on 62 points. Barcelona are 1 point behind on 61. Atletico Madrid, 55 points. Athletic Bilbao, 53 points. And Real Sociedad, back in the European spots on 43 points. On we go to Ligue 1. PSG hosted Reims in this game. And Mbappe started on the bench, came on in the second half, only got a single shot on goal.
Yeah.
Luis Enrique didn't really answer us as to why this is happening, but I think
we know why.
Do you think it's Enrique or the ownership, really? Because a manager should want to play his best players, right?
Do you know what? I think, you know, that's a good question. I think actually maybe it's a combination of both, but also I don't feel as if Enrique is the type of guy to really appreciate instruction from, you know, the owners. I don't feel like he's that type of manager. Which probably tells me that he's probably on his way out as well with Mbappe, if that's what he's doing. He's just like, well, fuck it. Do you know what I mean? We'll probably win the league and let me just take my money and go, basically. The fact he's been cryptic with it as well, you know, I think that's not gonna alleviate any sort of question marks over how he feels about his own future.
But I love that he's doing it because it's the most interesting thing in that league because the league has been over for the last 10 weeks. Gonzalo Ramos was the main character in this one on the field. He forced an own goal, which was the equalizer after Reims took the lead. Then he also scored to give them the lead at 2-1, but Reims equalized with a really lovely goal. Should probably have more details on it. It was so beautiful. I wish I could remember who scored it. Great pass to split the defense. I think even Mbappe, like, damn near applauded that shit on the bench. In any event, 2-2, PSG, Reims. Marseille hosted Nantes and won 2-0. An Aubameyang double, now 11 goals and 7 assists this season. Jean-Louis Gasset got fired by Cote d'Ivoire during AFCON, but somehow he's inspiring Marseille to great results because they've now scored 18 goals and conceded 3 since he was appointed. They're now challenging for the European spots against your boys, Lille, who hosted Reims.
Yeah.
And that ended 2-2. Thanks to a really, really late double from Jonathan David, 84th and 92nd minutes.
I know you weren't happy with that, but look, listen, man, look, one more thing on Lille. Look, Lille opened up renamed a new training ground after both of mine and Dean's, one of our favorite players ever, Eden Hazard. I probably got a softer spot for him because, I played a lot of Football Manager years back and he was someone I bought literally every single time I loaded up a new save.
You also have more tolerance for fat than I do.
That is
the real Scott Steiner in this bitch, okay? Respect.
But, they opened up a new training ground and his message to the players was like, guys, I don't want to see you guys using the gym. I don't want to see you guys running. All I want to see, and he didn't say this verbatim, but he basically said, all I want to see is pure hoops. I want to see you guys, but he did say, I want to see you guys breaking ankles. He literally did use those words. And that tells me a couple of things, right? He, as a carrier of the flame, as we like to say on here, recognizes his importance to the next generation coming up, because they're going to look up at so many of these players and think, wow, these guys, these boys are just bucket getters, but they're not actually playing for the love of the game. I think Hazard really and truly might underestimate how much influence he has. I feel like, you see how, what's his name? Kieran Anthony talks about Paul George being the GOAT for him, right?
Right.
You're gonna have a bunch of kids saying Eden Hazard is the GOAT for them because of not only what he won, but the way he went about his football. We all know he probably left another 10-15% out there, basically. Like, that's not up for debate. But he did so much of what he did give anyway. But yeah, I think that was really, really sweet of Lil, and it's good recognition for this type of player. Someone like Eden Hazard would not have this recognition in England. Let's just be clear. He just wouldn't, ever.
that's like Joe Cole or some shit, no?
Exactly.
Joe Cole played with Eden Hazard and mentored him.
Yeah. There we go. And here's the funny thing. Joe Cole has a job on BT Sport. Like, that's what the English rewarded him with, rather than, well, Joe Cole basically was Phil Foden before Phil Foden. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. That's, you know what I mean? Joe Cole's
skin. Let's name a training ground after him.
Yeah. Like,
no. You know what I mean? Just give him a job on TV.
Yeah. Like, it's ridiculous that Joe Cole should be in grassroots academies up and down the country showing these kids how the game should be played. I've read Michael Carrick's biography, I think twice now. And when he mentions Joe Cole, when he first obviously was at Chadwell Heath, it was like Joe Cole was basically so good, right, that the coaches essentially wouldn't really instruct him too much because they knew that he could win them the game, and that he was like the first one, I think, before Rio, before Lampard, to actually get a chance, basically. And he was the most comfortable by far. And again, you know, that's what we love, I suppose, about these types of players. Like, the talent speaks for itself. All the other shit comes afterwards.
Right, indeed. Well, we hope the game doesn't get rid of these dudes. The game is trying so hard to make itself boring. I don't know why. But yeah, Lille 2, Ron 2. Yeah. And on our final fixture from Ligue 1, Lyon continued their recovery by beating Lorient 2-0. I just want to give a shout out to Nemanja Matic. He was always good, even though he played for teams that I fucking hated.
Another electrician. No, he's a plumber, actually. He's always a
plumber. He's a plumber. He's a plumber. Full crack out and everything. He's a plumber. But yeah, he had 100% pass success rate in this game. 83 of 83 passes. He basically allows Maxon Kakare and Corentin Tolisso to play further up the field.
Yeah.
And that has made a great difference to Lyon. That and changing their coach 12 times. You know, but it's neither here nor there. The standings in France. We'll start with second because fuck first. Brest are in second on 46 points. Monaco are right behind them on 45. Lille have 42 points. Lens also have 42 points. Nice are on 40 points in sixth. Marseille are now in seventh on 39 points. Lyon have made it all the way up to 10th, coach. You were right. They were never getting relegated.
No.
All right, my friends.
It would have been fun, though.
No, not really. That's bad for Heritage, bro. That's bad for her. I'm not having Lyon getting relegated. Fuck that. Okay. Now Chelsea, you know, but
yeah,
you already knew that. Serie A, my friend. Inter, they beat Bologna 1-0 last Friday. Great goal. This was a Bastoni crossing to Jan Bisek. That is one central defender crossing to the other central defender for a goal from open play. Simone Inzaghi is on crack, you know. But then again, he's just stealing Chris Wilder's swag. I've seen this before.
I mean, put it this. I think a lot of people that might not know about Bastoni and his capabilities, his left foot is so fucking good, yeah, that I know he's not with us anymore, but I think Mihailovic might actually be living in, taking refuge in his body. Bastoni's distribution is fantastic, seriously.
He's up. Well, distribution and ball striking from that position, I'd say he's the number one in the world in that position, at least. I can't think of another left-footed center back that can do the things he can do on the ball. Inter rotated heavily in this game, six players against fourth place Bologna, who have been in very good form themselves. And really, watching the game, all Bologna had, they had like two long distance shots from Lewis Ferguson. Mm-hmm. One of them he should have passed to Xerxes, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But Inter are just so comfortable in that league. They look a level above. I mean, and you see the points gap, you know, to Juventus. I mean, to Milan at this point, it's a full 16 points at this stage, but we'll talk about the table in a second. My boy Xerxes picked up an injury because, coach, he was working so hard, so hard, that he did his thigh. So I'm just letting you know, when he comes in the summer, he's a hard worker. Milan.
Not my problem, man. Honestly, man. It is what it is.
Milan hosted Empoli, and Captain America, Christian Pulisic, scored the only goal in the game with the deflected goal. He's Milan's top scorer this season with 8 so far.
Yeah.
Fiorentina hosted Roma, and this was probably the game of the weekend in that league. 2-2 draw. Late equalizer from Llorente for Roma, 5 minutes into stoppage time. Juventus hosted Atalanta. Juventus and I in third. Weston McKennie got 2 assists in this game for both of Juventus' goals. Yeah. But Tim Koopmeiners scored a brace for the visitors, and the game ended 2-2. Coach, what do you think of Koopmeiners, man?
I'm a big fan of his. I think generally he's had his career has been quite strange, because there's been hype around him, then not so much hype, you know. Then he's been linked with this club. I think right now he's been linked with Liverpool, even.
Who he reminds me of?
Go on.
Szoboszlai.
Well,
I feel like the same kind of midfielder to me.
Yeah, but I think Szoboszlai has more capacity to want to play a little bit deeper.
More physical.
I definitely see it. But he's a strange one. I feel like his career is just, you know, if he gets that, you know, really big move, then we might see the hype that was there, you know, a few years ago.
I mean, based on the way his career has gone, I feel like his really big move is going to be to a place like fucking Wolves or something.
Yeah. but in regards to McKennie, though, like, I have a lot of chats about him, ironically, in one of my group chats, and I always say, look, if he puts shit together, he can be one of the best players in Italy, like, genuinely. And the fact that he's still a little bit inconsistent. But I think he's got, 9 assists now or 11 assists this season?
Listen, man, Juventus want him to sign a new contract.
Yeah.
What else we say? So I'm going to go ahead and eat some crow, but my issue with him has never really been about the player. It was about the fact that he wasn't professional.
Yeah.
You know, and to, especially American in Europe, there's already a strike against you. You can't be out there with that level of talent and not be on your shit.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's on his shit now, you know, so good for him.
And with his shoulder popping out every so often as well, like, you know. he's on 9 assists, man. Look, seriously, like, I really hope he's able to just keep his shit together, because I feel like all of his skills, the fact he's running with the ball and without the ball, he can obviously create, you know, he can tackle as well. He's the type of player that in Italy he can really, like, he can really dominate if things go
for. Look at Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah.
That nigga's Indian in Italy, man.
Exactly. So
he was playing wing back in Chelsea.
Just do anything, whatever.
Oh, man. But Thomas Tuchel is a terrorist. Real quick, the table, the standings. Inter, first, 75 points. Milan, their city rivals, follow them on 59 points, 16 points back. Juventus are on 58 points. Bologna, 51. Roma, a further 3 back on 48. And Atalanta in 6th on 47. That is us done in Italy. Coach, the Super League. We already spent a bunch of time on Liverpool and Manchester City, so we won't talk about them anymore. But we also didn't put out a Manchester United pod this weekend because Coach is, as we said earlier, he's only at 60% right now, people. He's a hero for us right now, man. In any event, United hosted Everton, and from my perspective, I didn't watch all of the game, Coach.
No.
They won 2-0, but it felt like a United.
Put it this. This is the highest line, I think, and if the stats will probably tell you, this is the highest line Everton have played this season. That lets you know what teams think of United right now, whether they're home or away. I'm not going to rant too long about United, because I'm at a point where, while I think the sensible thing for United would be to get rid of Ten Hag, they probably won't. But I think he's
end of the season, they'll get rid of him at the end.
Well, if they do, then United might be onto something. But I just think he's really just, it hasn't worked out for him.
I don't think they can look at what he's done despite the injuries or whatever and keep him on. If they keep him on, then United fans should be very worried about Ineos.
Yeah.
He's simple as that. If they, like, it's so clear that they should fire him.
Yeah.
So if they don't, there's a problem. So that whole recovery you're hoping for, it's not coming. If they don't fire him
It's happening. And here's the thing. And here's the thing as well. Just on the game itself, Everton are a team that don't have many creative players. They don't really have a standout goal scorer or whatever, but they look like they could score almost every time they attack on Saturday.
I think of all the teams in the league, I think it's them, then Chelsea or vice versa for underperforming XG.
Yeah,
because they created a lot and they should have won this game despite the score. You know, do you think Everton fans think Garnacho is like a Ballon d'Or level talent after what he's done to them this season?
So here's the funny thing, you know. The second penalty he won, that's just genuinely bad defending. They let him carry the ball for so long, like, and then it was just dumb.
Maybe they thought he was escaping to Argentina.
Yeah, it was just dumb. But yeah, that's enough for United and Ten Hag's bald head.
Oh man, 2-0 United. Crystal Palace hosted Luton Town, and that ended 1-1 thanks to a late equalizer from a former Crystal Palace player in Carly Woodrow. What do you hear about that? This feels like some little story that you would care about on that side of the pond.
I think the last goal he scored was probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah, for Crystal Palace.
Yeah. So, but I think what was hilarious about the game is that Crystal Palace were doing Olé football literally about 2 minutes before they
1-0 up.
Yeah, they were doing Olé football, and it was just like what's his name? Eze was doing like unnecessary flicks as passes and stuff like that, and they were keeping the ball. It's like, you do that when you're 3-0 up, bro.
They don't respect Oliver Glasner yet. During this 3-week period that he has them, I think they're traveling somewhere for a training camp.
Yeah,
he's going to show them what it's like to follow an Austrian for real.
Yeah,
and they'll fix up. That was fucking unnecessary as fuck. They should not have dropped those points.
Yeah.
Shout out Mateta for looking for like a striker again, though. I didn't think he had it in
the great game. Finish, actually.
Great finish. Yeah. Bournemouth hosted Sheffield United, and that one ended 2-2. Can't really think of a better illustration of why Sheffield United should go down than being two goals up away from home in the 70th minute and still drawing after conceding from a pair of set pieces. However, I'm also an Arsenal fan, so I can think of a better reason for them to go down. But this is a terrible team, bro.
I just can't get my head around the fact that John Fleck isn't playing as much football as I want him to. I need him to suffer.
Okay. I was like, what the fuck is your problem, bro? Like, I understand John Fleck. All right. But that's neither here nor there. Wolves hosted Fulham and won 2-1. Gary O'Neill, the winner of the Adama Traore Derby. He has now matched Wolves' point total from last season with 10 games to spare. They're in the hunt for Europe. Gary O'Neill might be... I don't know. I feel like he's probably manager of the season. If I think, not that these awards matter, coach, but if Arsenal somehow do this, then it's Arteta.
Yeah.
If one of the other two do it, nobody cares.
What I will say, I think Iwobi over this weekend created 7 chances this match, which is more than any other midfielder,
and scored the consolation goal.
Yeah. So. I mean,
is he growing up?
I need a Wobi at a Champions League level club. Seriously, man. Like, please, somebody save this nigga. I beg you.
I'm not lying. In the moments when things were, when it was hard to be a Kai Havertz stan, I dreamt about Alex Wobi in some moments. That boy runs. You know, you seen him running for Nigeria at AFCON? And people abuse him afterwards? God punish all of you. Anywho. Brighton hosted Nottingham Forest, and that one ended 1-0 to Brighton thanks to an own goal from Andrew Omotbamidele.
Yeah.
And apparently this was maybe the most boring match of the season to date.
Well, I don't think Brighton care because they've been leaking goals like...
Well, they didn't leak one this time, so, you know, shout out them. What are you thinking? How do you feel about Roberto Di Zerbi? He's still linked with big clubs. I think that's still justified based on the body of work to date and the innovation that he brought to the game. You know,
I don't like the fact that he just teams like him. So teams like his, should I say, shouldn't be getting smoked like four or five, like more than a few times, more than a couple of times a season, basically. And it seems to be such a regular occurrence with them that it worries me, because regardless of player quality, if you set your team up a certain way in the Premier League, especially, teams will just tear your head off. That's what will happen. And I feel as if even if you've got a better quality of player to work with, he'll still set up in a way where they'll be vulnerable. And I don't like that.
I concur, but the sense I get, and apparently this used to happen a lot when he was at Sassuolo as well, to be honest. But I just get the sense that if he's ever at a big club, by default, like, one, he's not going to be buying the players. That's the first thing. And second, you know, if he's at somewhere like Liverpool, nobody's running over Dominic Szoboszlai like the same way they ran over fucking Billy Gilmore every fucking week. You know? But that's neither here nor there. I still rate him as a coach, but, you know, he has a lot to learn. Put it that way. Some coaches arrive fully formed.
Yeah.
And they're at Arsenal. And some don't. You know, it takes time. West Ham hosted Burnley in the Claret Derby. And, of course, Danny Ings had something to say about it, because he scored the late equalizer, his first goal of the season, in late injury time.
He got denied like 7 minutes earlier as well, which is
funny. But I knew in my heart of hearts that he was still going to score.
Oh, yeah.
Because a man cannot play for Burnley, West Ham,
Southampton,
and Aston Villa,
yeah,
all the Claret and Blue teams, and not have a fucking impact on the game. I just knew it was going to happen. And his hair is looking good too. That transplant has taken him really well. Good job. Good job, Larry. Good job. Good Lord. What else do we have to talk about, coach?
Right.
Chelsea played Newcastle in some derby that I haven't made a name up for yet that I don't like. But they won 3-2 at Stamford Bridge. That happened today, right before we recorded.
Yeah.
Cole Palmer. I think I respect him now.
listen, man, put it like this. Cole Palmer is so good that if you offered Pep a chance to sign him back tomorrow, he probably would. Not because he needs him per se, but that's that sort of quality you don't just sell
to Chelsea because you're in the mood for it. Like that was wild. Like if he would definitely take that back.
Oh yeah, for sure. Jacob Murphy's goal was great. So was Mudrić's as well, actually.
I'm telling you, bro, if they'll listen, I want him at the Arsenal. Boy, Arteta knows what he's doing, man. Did you see how quick his feet were moving, bro?
15 million, yeah, and they better take it. Especially if Chelsea get conference. If Chelsea get Conference League, they better take every single penny that teams offer them.
And make sure you don't offer a penny before June 30th. like that's when this becomes a real problem for them.
Yeah.
And coach, we're not gonna go too long because somehow we've made an hour despite you being on 60%, but you didn't get a chance to talk about Arsenal 2, Brentford 1.
Yeah. Really and truly, just fuck Ivan Tony, bro. Like you're a twat. I'm really, really glad that you won't be getting your big move to a club playing Champions League football unless Liverpool want to save you, because City ain't buying you, we ain't buying you. Villa ain't buying you, you know what I mean? So, yeah. But also, Aaron Ramsdale, bro. Look, I'm sorry, man, but it's genuinely. I think, you know, he's gonna have an interview at the end of the season or whatever when he's got to his new club, and he'll be like, "That Brentford game is when I knew it was over." That's what he'll say, because
he's not that fucking stupid.
No, he's not that self-aware. I feel like he genuinely thought he still probably had a chance, and then.
It was over when we were linked to Raya. It was over then.
No, because we always wanted
Raya.
Yeah. I know that. But I'm saying for him, because he's clear. Look, he went on record to say, look, he can't concentrate for the full match. He's clearly not someone that, I know this, but he's clearly not someone that is that well wrapped. Is what I'm trying to say.
I just saw Ian Wright's face again. I just lost anyone. I think he might have made the call to Arteta. Like, have you seen this?
So, yeah. But look, Ben White, look, you're one of the best footballers in the world. I'm sure Lionel Messi would love to learn off you at some point.
He's just a shit Rafa Varane, bro. Shut up.
Ben White, I don't want to see him in midfield because that would mean that we're in trouble. But it makes sense why he played in midfield for Leeds, because he's got everything. Ben White is one of the best footballers at Arsenal. And this is a team that has the likes of Saka, Odegaard, Declan Rice. do you know what I mean? Number five. But Ben White, in terms of being a footballer, is right up there with them. So,
It's interesting the things players have to do to make it at a higher level.
Yeah.
Because watch those highlights of Ben White at Leeds. I remember watching him when we were linked back in the day, but I forgot all the things he can really do.
Listen,
in the center of the pitch,
he's a Swiss Army knife. Because I think it's great that Arteta charged him with so much responsibility, because he said, look, playing fullback for Arsenal, it's not just fullback. You have to do X, Y, Z. And I feel like he's capable. Not everybody's capable of being a playmaker in one phase of play, then being an actual right back in another phase of play, then being a winger. Like he's capable of doing all those things to such a high level. I'm not going to say he's David Alaba, but that's the best comparison I can think of when you think about players being able to execute things in different positions at a high level. Now, all the respect to David Alaba, and I would love for Ben White to eventually get to that level. I'm not saying he is, but that's what I think of when you think of a player that can play this position and that position and give you 7, 8 out of 10 all within the same 90 minutes.
So was he worth the 50 million or not?
I listen, Brighton, we might have to break you off a bit more change, honestly. It seems like we're underpaying for a lot of these players at this point.
We've been robbing niggas, man. Talent ID be robbing niggas. All those jokes about Edu and the release clause, them niggas knew what they were doing. These niggas is nice. All right. On that note, coach, thank you so much for making an appearance this weekend, toughing it out, giving the people what they want. I appreciate it for not leaving me out here on my lonesome, because I'm scared of these niggas, man. I'm scared, man. In any event, tell the people peace.
Peace.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my shirt. My plantation. My plantation. My plantation.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.